Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. And greetings, Earth Explorers from all around the world. We're so glad to have you here with us tonight on X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. Welcome. The solar wind is a respectable 483.5 kilometers per second, while the proton count is up to 2.4 protons per cubic centimeter. What does that mean? Well, not much of a sunburn out there today if you go out. There are two sunspots active and facing Earth today, 1073 and 1074, neither of which seem to pose a threat for flares. On May 29th, yesterday, the Interplanetary Magnetic Field, that's known as the IMF, tilted south and opened a crack in Earth's magnetosphere. Solar wind poured in and fueled a G1 class geomagnetic storm. Northern lights were sighted as far south as Wisconsin. The storm has subsided now. The next storm is due tomorrow, or June 1st, when a solar wind stream is expected to hit Earth's magnetic field. Also, just in case you'd like to know, asteroid 2010 JN71 passed within 8.2 lunar distances of Earth on the 26th. It's 245 meters in diameter. That was close. Looking over the next 4 days, the X-37B, the Air Force's mysterious robotic space shuttle, is passing over the eastern seaboard during the evening hours, but it will be faint, only about as bright as the small stars of the Dipper. But it will pass over twice a night, except for the 31st of May, tomorrow. It will pass over three times in a single night. You might want to jump out there and see if you can snap a few pictures of it if you have a really strong telephoto lens. There were 22 earthquakes greater than 3.0 on the scale worldwide, but none over 5.0. They're everywhere and very weak right now. Also, the U.S. Air Force on my birthday, by the way, thank you very much for all the Facebook wishes for a happy birthday. I got them all. I appreciated every single one of them. Thank you so much. Anyway, on May 27th, the Air Force successfully launched the first of a new generation of GPS satellites aboard a Delta IV rocket from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. Boeing is under contract to deliver 12 GPS 2F satellites to the Air Force, and the program is more than 3 years behind schedule. A May 2009 report from a government watchdog agency said the program has incurred $870 million in cost growth since its inception. We call those cost overruns. According to Boeing spokesman Diana Ball, however, the program cost growth was due in part to changes in scope requested by the government. Boeing in 2008 lost out to Lockheed Martin Space Systems, also known as Skunk Works, in the competition to build the next generation GPS-3 satellites. The GPS-3 constellation is expected to begin launching in 2014. By the way, those satellites will only be used by aircraft and mostly military functions. So if you're having problems with your TomTom or your Garmin, it's probably because of the aging GPS satellites. Also, don't forget, Remembering the Future, the new ebook, is out right now. The printed version will take a little more than 45 days. We made a second round through editing this week. It's looking really good. But you can read it now and get a 25% discount on the printed version by going to rememberingthefuturebook.com. The ebook's only $7.95. A lot of people are holding out for the printed version, but you know, the ebook has some advantages because you get all those illustrations in color. Also, don't forget, Twitter is alive and well on X Squared Radio. I add stuff usually during the day as we approach the announcement on the Inner Earth Expedition, the launch of the nation's first affordable electric vehicles, and other great things. So follow me on Twitter by searching for Brooks Agnew. Also, don't forget to click on the Web Talk Radio link at X Squared Radio. It's a short 30-minute program. The more you click and the more friends you send there, the better our chances of syndication. That means we get to play on the airwaves. So let's spread the word. We need something positive out there. We'll be back in 40 seconds. Don't go away. X Squared Radio will be right with you.
Expands consciousness. The spice is vital to space travel.
Speaking of space travel, NASA confirmed this week that the Phoenix Mars lander is dead. Earlier this month, an image taken by another spacecraft, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, showed changes in Phoenix's shadows, consistent with predictions that hundreds of pounds of carbon dioxide ice accumulated on the spacecraft, bending or breaking its solar panels. Keep in mind, people, that report that it doesn't get that cold on Mars, as people might think, should note that carbon dioxide freezes at minus 78 degrees Celsius. The good news is that with that much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, it's highly likely that photosynthesis can take place somewhere on Mars during the summer months. Maybe we need to send a little Edelweiss to Mars. The Dow had the worst May since 1940. Oil erased any gains the market tried to make. Obama is suspending exploration in two areas off Alaska, canceling pending lease sales in the Gulf of Mexico and proposed sales off Virginia's coast, extending by 6 months a moratorium on deep water drilling permits, and suspending operations at all 33 exploratory wells being drilled in the Gulf. This will further drive the cost of oil up and the value of stocks down. Without an alternative to oil as a fuel for transportation, retail businesses will suffer nationally. People will stay home. The cost of goods sold will increase. Jobs will be lost. Another energy industry must come forward to replace the shortage if we are to grow. What do I mean by that? Well, let's see. You know, at one time, many of you are too young to remember this, but at one time, alcohol was the fuel for cars. That's how the internal combustion engine started. Then, with one sweep of the pen, alcohol was made illegal, and Rockefeller's oil company had a new market overnight. Ever since then, we have been burning gasoline to drive our cars. In the 1960s, gas was cheap in the U.S. because the U.S. and Germany drilled for oil everywhere on cheap leases because countries were hungry. Then, in the early 1970s, the OPEC nations, those are the nations that produce petroleum, decided to nationalize the rigs and equipment, and we had 300% inflation on oil in 1 year. I can tell you, I drove a 1969 Roadrunner, 383, 440, 4-barrel, and it was fast. And I thought the world was going to end because gas went to 73 cents a gallon. But I kind of saw their point. These countries had limited resources, and it was being stripped from them cheaply and leaving them in poverty while the American and British oil companies made billions. Now, we have a different problem. That is refining capacity. The process of turning oil into fuel is dirty, and no one wants it in their backyard. Add to that the fact that we have not built a new nuclear facility in 25 years, and we have a real challenge on our hands. But that challenge has not been met with innovation in other fuels and sources of energy until recently. I say that not to inflame the airwaves tonight, because I know many of you know of advanced technologies that are out there, ideas that are trying their damnedest to get out to the people, to let them know that they can go off-grid, that they can drive their cars on something else, that much more efficient vehicles are possible. In the 2003 bibendium, cars were going over 90 miles per gallon. The winner did 99 miles per gallon, driving on a racetrack and competing against the world's challengers. Of course, higher mileage solutions are out there. Of course, alternative fuels can be made. But it gets tricky. Even when fuel production begins from these alternative sources, the oil companies lobby for laws and specifications that make the fuel non-competitive. That means it costs too much at the pump, and you won't buy it. For instance, biodiesel, which has a 300% return on energy investment, would be a viable fuel except for one thing. The methanol or ethanol it takes to make the esterification reaction take place must be recovered until there is only 0.2% left in the mixture. The natural distillation limit is 2%. That's 10 times higher. And it takes very little energy to reach. Just simple distillation will get it there. The rest of the methanol is chemically bonded and cannot evaporate at any temperature at atmospheric pressure. In fact, the fuel is higher quality and produces more power in this natural state. But the oil companies lobbied for tighter specifications, which require 90% more energy to be poured into the process to achieve. And that's why biodiesel costs more than regular diesel at the pump. Add to that the fact that methanol is produced by, you guessed it, the oil companies and imported into the United States. There's no large-scale production of methanol in the United States. So by the time the methanol gets in the country, gets shipped to the plant, it's about $4.70 a gallon. Now, that is used in copious amounts in the reaction. Some of it is recovered, and it can be reused as long as it's blended with virgin methanol. But that raises the price of biodiesel to about a dollar above the price of diesel from petroleum. So the best we can hope for is biodiesel blended with regular diesel. Add to that that ethanol from cellulosic sources, not from corn, but from the corn stalks, the cobs, switchgrass, agricultural waste, has been tried for almost a century. Now they can make it work, but the regulations are such that no one can afford to make it. The cost should be about 20 cents a gallon to produce from agricultural waste, but federal funding requires enzymatic processes to increase yields. It also makes the cost 10 times higher. Without the grant funding, no one can afford to start a facility and take the time to build the market. ethanol for gasoline is an energy waste of time. It barely produces one for one. Usually it's about 80% return on energy investment. By the time you plow the fields and process the waste, ship it to the plant and all of that, the ethanol added to gasoline just doesn't make the gasoline that much more powerful. In fact, it makes it less powerful. But for biodiesel, it can generate massive profits for natural, renewable, and clean-burning fuel that does not require any petroleum products. Methanol, of course, is made from natural gas and comes from the oil companies, usually from countries in South America. Now, one thing to pay attention to in South America is their winter is our summer. So naturally, in the winter time, up here, it's summertime down there. Natural gas is not used very much for heating. So therefore, the methanol gets very expensive. In the summertime in the United States, it's winter in the South. So natural gas is in production. And methanol can be used, produced from that natural gas, and the price goes down. But this swing in pricing can be up to 50%. 50% swings in pricing on your raw materials to make the biodiesel means that you cannot predict the industry. It's very, very difficult to predict a profit in the biodiesel industry when your price of commodities, your raw materials, is swinging so wildly. This could be fixed. This could be stabilized and produce thousands of jobs in the United States if cellulosic ethanol would be funded and deregulated so that plants could get up and get running. Now, we have friends in the cause, my dear Earth Explorers. Recently, we have been really deluged with news about a spill in the Gulf of Mexico. BP's oil rig blew up, and we'll explain to you why that happened, how that happened. And we would invite your phone calls and your comments on it. The phone number tonight, if you want to be part of the program, is 415-762-1161. 415-762-1161. Anywhere, on planet or off planet, if you can get to a cell phone tower, you can reach us. 415-762-1161. Now, what's going on is this is being billed as one of the greatest ecological disasters in the history of the United States. Young people can say that. People that are familiar with the oil industry know that in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, we were hungry for oil, and there were no such regulations. In Southern California, there was a gusher that got away that flowed 100,000 barrels of oil a day. It filled up a valley with oil. And they were rowing boats across the valley in a sea of oil. They attempted to pump it all into trucks and haul it away, but they only got about half of it before the gusher finally subsided and they were able to control the well. The rest of it seeped into the soil of the valley. Today, houses and freeways and businesses and even agricultural products are grown on that land, and you can't tell that 50 years ago, 70 years ago, 80 years ago, there were oil spills of a most horrible kind. I grew up in Huntington Beach. When our homes were built there, right across the street were deep oil wells packed side by side, open-top tanks with black crude bubbling into them all day and all night. Spills all over the ground, tar, sticky and black, covered the fields across from our home. Sure enough, the Southern California real estate became too expensive. The oil wells weren't producing like they used to. So they removed the wells, bulldozed the sites, and built malls and schools and subdivisions. You can't even tell that those spills occurred years ago. But this is different. This is different. This spill is not taking place deep into the ocean, hundreds of miles off of our coast. Far from it. It's occurring a mere 50 miles off the coast of Louisiana. in the prime fishing area of the Gulf of Mexico. Recently, one of our friends, Leilani Munter, she's the race car driver. She's also a green monster in a little package. This month, she made a visit to the Gulf of Mexico to see for herself what is going on. This is what she said in her own words. After spending a week in Venice, Louisiana, getting an up-close view of the BP Gulf Coast oil spill disaster, talking with locals whose livelihoods are over, and seeing dead wildlife, I am trying my best to look at the positive side. Keep in mind that I just got off the phone with one of my boat captains in Louisiana, and he told me he saw 6 dead dolphins and 10 dead turtles in the past few days. So the idea of looking on the bright side is nearly impossible, and most days I fail. But I think it is human nature to try to find something positive in the face of a catastrophe. The only positive thing that can possibly come from this, the largest environmental disaster in American history, is if it causes us to change the way we are living on this earth. When Dale Earnhardt Sr. died on the last lap of the Daytona 500 in 2001, it devastated NASCAR. He was their biggest star and a hero to most of their audience. The one positive thing that came from his death is that racing took a good hard look at safety, and they made some really big changes. After his death, all drivers were required to wear full-face helmets. Earnhardt wore an open-face helmet, as well as a Hans device, that's a head and neck restraint system. Safer barriers or soft walls were installed in the speedways so that when we crashed, the racetrack wall would help absorb some of the impact. It cost millions of dollars, but it has also likely saved many lives. I have since had wrecks at nearly 200 miles per hour. One impact was so intense, it put a crack through my motor, and I have walked away with nothing but bruises and a sore back. I don't know for sure that I would have walked away from those crashes if many years earlier Earnhardt hadn't passed away and changed the safety rules of racing. His death marked a permanent change in the way motorsport safety was conducted. NASCAR drew a line in the sand and never looked back. That fateful moment made racing safer for all drivers that have strapped themselves into a race car since, including myself. Perhaps one day we will look back at this oil spill and think, if the Gulf Coast oil spill hadn't happened, we wouldn't have kick-started our clean energy economy back in 2010. We wouldn't have made such great strides with solar PV and thermal technology, geothermal energy, wind and tidal turbines, green buildings, hydrogen fuel cell, and electric cars, alternative fuels like cellulosic ethanol and algae-based biodiesel, and we might not have passed the American Power Act. Perhaps we will look back and incredulously say, imagine if the Gulf Coast oil spill hadn't happened. We might actually still be running our country on dirty fossil fuels and spending billions of dollars buying oil from foreign countries. Wouldn't that be awful? Charles Darwin once said, it's not the strongest of the species that survives, nor is it the most intelligent that survives. It is the one that is most adaptable to change. And so our time has come. This is the 11th hour. We either change the way we are living on the planet or relegate ourselves to eventually having our planet covered with oily water, polluted air, dead coral reefs, and cattle pastures where there were once rainforests. I hope that this disaster will wake us up and make those in charge realize that now is the time for us to turn over a new leaf, to check ourselves into rehab, to get off our addiction to fossil fuels and start a new, sober life with clean, renewable energy. I am a race car driver. My career is currently based around an internal combustion engine, and yet even I can see the importance of energy independence and the move toward the use of clean, renewable energy. We are at a crossroads, and I hope we take the right turn, or maybe it's a left. Let's take a step, or even better, a leap in the right direction. Let's pass the American Power Act and start putting a real effort into capturing clean energy from the wind, the sun, and the ocean. Let's put Americans to work building our new green energy economy. We've been talking about it for years. The technology is already here. All we have to do now is to make it happen. What in the world are we waiting for? Millions of gallons of oil to spill into the Gulf of Mexico? My greatest hope in the wake of this ongoing tragedy is that this is our clean energy wake-up call. My biggest fear? That we won't answer the call. Those are the words of Leilani Munter. Now, I would also like to play for you a YouTube of her. This is her words as she speaks about her experience off the coast of Louisiana with the Gulf Coast oil spill. Pay close attention.
It's now been 1 month since the Deepwater Horizon sank, and oil is still gushing into the Gulf of Mexico. I spent a week getting an up-close view of the BP oil spill disaster and the damage it's doing to not only our environment and all of the wildlife in our oceans, but also the people of the Gulf Coast, who are only just now getting back on their feet from Hurricane Katrina.
What I do for a living is fishing, and I make my money fishing. There's not a price that they could pay to fix this at all. I mean, you know, I've been doing this since I was a little kid. Now it's ruined. And there's, like I said, there's not a price that they can possibly pay to fix what they've done. There's no way. So.
After the Exxon Valdez oil spill, a settlement of $5 billion was awarded to the people whose livelihoods were ruined by the oil spill. Exxon fought this for 2 decades and got it reduced to just $500 million, pennies on the dollar, and by the time these legal wars were over, 20% of the fishermen who were supposed to be paid by Exxon were already dead. We cannot let this happen again.
Yeah, it could ruin us for a long time. They're saying if it does come in here, it could ruin us for about 15 years. So we have to find another career.
The images that you're looking at, I took 70 miles away from where the Deepwater Horizon sank. Charles Darwin once said, "It is not the strongest of the species that survives, nor the most intelligent that survives. It is the one that is most adaptable to change." And so in the spirit of Charles Darwin, it is time for us to utilize our intelligence to change, to adapt the way that we are living on this planet.
It's going to completely devastate this area. When I say devastated, it's going to make Hurricane Katrina look like a drop in a bucket.
As a race car driver, my career is dependent on an internal combustion engine. And yet even I can see the importance of ending our addiction to fossil fuels and making the move towards the use of clean, renewable energy from the wind and the sun and the ocean. Use that renewable energy to make electricity for our cars, for our homes, and for our buildings. Our constant burning of fossil fuels, which currently puts 90 million tons of CO2 into our atmosphere every day, is destroying the balance of life on Earth. I want clean air and clean water for people and for all the species that live on Earth.
These people don't have a strong voice in Washington, D.C. And so when it comes to making policy over how these oil platforms are managed, the oil industry has the upper hand because they have lobbyists, they have lawyers, they have experts. The shrimpers, the oystermen, and the other fishermen don't have that kind of voice.
Big Oil currently spends $150 million a year on 750 full-time lobbyists that work to get the laws written in their favor. And just look at what they've done to the Gulf of Mexico. We cannot allow Big Oil to continue to get away with these crimes against humanity, wildlife, and our ecosystems. Call and write your senators and tell them that you want clean energy for our planet and energy independence for America. Let's stop spending all of our money overseas buying oil from foreign countries and instead put Americans to work right here, building our green energy economy. Let's do this together. The time is now. Enough.
And I'm just a fisherman. They should have had a backup plan before they drilled. You can't kill Mother Nature with chemicals and expect to clean it up.
I'd like to take just a moment to send a message to BP CEO Tony Hayward. The company that you lead has caused the largest environmental disaster in American history, and it is going to take decades for our ecosystems and for our people to recover. I think I speak for all of the American people when I say that your cavalier and dismissive attitude towards this oil spill is not making you any friends. Maybe you should spend a little less time doing media interviews trying to reduce the perceived impact of your oil spill, and instead spend more time trying to plug the leak and cleaning up the mess that you have made in our Gulf.
There you have it, 200-mile-an-hour Leilani Munter delivering it to BP. And she speaks for me, too. So those of you that doubt that this is a disaster, you're listening to the PR, you don't realize that those full-time lobbyists in Washington are keeping biodiesel, cellulosic ethanol, wind generators, and even other renewable fuels off the market. They're keeping their monopoly on the internal combustion engine. Well, I can tell you that the people have had enough. And if X Squared Radio has any effect on getting you not only awakened, but also into action, to pick up your mouse pad, go to your computer, go to your congressman and your senator, and write them a letter. Write them a note, and if they don't answer you back, then you need to mark an X across them and find someone who will re-elect Congress, elect a new Congress, elect a new Senate. I'm telling you, there's only 435 of them up there, and we can do this. Now, there are some solutions that are being proposed. I'm going to play for you a possible solution in just a moment, but I want to make sure that you understand that I want you to answer the question, are you awake? Well, I believe you are. Now, the next question is, what can you do about it? Well, I'll tell you what you can do. And I don't think that the boycott BP efforts that are out there are going to work, because BP isn't alone. They're also not the largest oil company, and they're not the largest buyer of lobbyists in Washington. They're not the ones paying for the condos and the golf trips. They're not the ones that are contributing hundreds of millions of dollars to campaigns to elect officials that will vote legislation that protects their interests into office. You can start by buying an electric vehicle. Oops, that's right. There aren't any for sale. Well, that can be fixed this year. That's right. There are companies out there right now, just like Vision Motor Cars, and they are ready to deliver you the solution to all of this. Now, don't worry about this being an infomercial. That's not what this is. There's room for at least 15 major electric car manufacturers. I can't tell you all their names, but I can tell you who they are not. They are not General Motors. They are not Ford. They are not Chrysler, Nissan, nor Toyota. There is nothing in this for them, and they are scared to death. They are giants like 10-mile-long oil tankers, and they cannot turn from their course. And their course is to make gasoline-powered cars and trucks. There is no gain for them to add electric cars to their lineup. Every car they make that's electric will replace another car they make. There's no win for them. Now, I was speaking with a government official the other day, and she asked me a very strange question. Do you think the Department of Energy feels confident in giving money to a startup, to a small business, to bring cars to the public? Or do you think they would be better off giving their money to the established car companies that have dealerships, maintenance stations, and networks to be able to service the vehicles that would be in the hands of the American people? And I answered her very quickly. I said, are we talking about the same companies that went bankrupt a few months ago that pulled $40 billion of tax money down a black hole to cover their mismanagement? Are we talking about the same companies who have been talking about electric vehicles since 1995 and still don't have an affordable vehicle for the American people? Are we talking about those companies? Are we talking about the companies that have regular layoffs and union squabbles on a daily basis? I think we are. And I said, I think absolutely the government would have a much better payoff on their investment if they put their money into small business. If they put it into companies that would actually hire new people, people that are out of work, and that those companies would be nimble, and they would be agile, and they would be able to respond to you, the American people. One of the things that people don't understand is that electric cars will last for 30 years or more. They have far fewer moving parts. There's no oil in them, no water, no belts, no hoses. They only have 6 or 7 moving parts, and electric motors with no brushes and no bearings will outlast the metal it takes to build them. I'm asking you to get them started. It's up to new companies. Companies who know how to make electric vehicles. They can make an affordable vehicle that the average American can drive and charge up in their own garage with their own regular outlets. No multi-billion-dollar charging grid is necessary. We have one. It's called an electrical outlet. If you haven't heard about these cars, that's because the companies cannot afford to reach you with fancy commercials. You will have to go to them. So invest if you have it. Donate if you can. And by all means, buy one of their vehicles. Start driving to work in an electric vehicle. And believe me when I tell you from my own experience, not buying gasoline is the sweetest feeling of freedom I have felt in years. What's more, my truck is fueled with 100% American-made electricity. And your electric car will be too. But we have some work to do. We have some house cleaning to do. And when I say house cleaning, I mean the House of Representatives and the Senate and the White House. We are tired of inaction and lies. We are tired of deception and bleeding the American people of taxes while doing nothing to help clean the energy industry. So, there are some solutions out there for this spill. This one was just recently dropped into my hands. I'm going to play it for you. Maybe it's a solution. I know many of you haven't heard about it because it hasn't been clicked on very much on YouTube. This is out there. Now I want you to listen.
I'm making this video to get the word out about a process that's guaranteed to clean up the oil spill before our animals end up like this picture. What they're doing now is using buoys and booms. It's like holding up a string trying to keep a hurricane from hitting your house. It's just not going to happen. The oil will go over it. The oil will go under it. The same thing with dispersants. Folks, wake up. Dispersants are toxic. They're just as toxic as the oil that we're trying to hide. It's like putting paint thinner on a glob of wet paint. It just thins it out. It doesn't get rid of anything. We're allowing BP to just hide how big the problem is by turning it into a thin sheen. There's only one solution that can stop total disaster, and it's been proven several times on real oil spills to work. And I have physically talked to several of the companies that provide this particular solution, and they are sitting there saying they have warehouses full of product. It's microbes. Microbes physically eat the oil in just days, leaving the water clean and safe for wildlife. And when the microbes get finished with the oil, it dies and it's completely harmless. I'm looking for folks that will actually help me get the word out to the press, to BP, and either the federal or state governments down there. Watch this video, and my contact information is at the end. Get in touch with me, and I will talk to anybody that will listen, and we'll get this mess cleaned up in 6 weeks, not 5 or 6 years.
So there you have it. I mean, the solution is out there, okay? These technologies are available that are ecologically safe, and they can work. Now, why is BP not using this kind of technology? Why are they not taking matters into their own hands like a responsible company and taking care of this mess? We don't really know. But I'd love to hear from you, your ideas, 415-762-1161. Anywhere, on planet or off planet, if you've got a feeling about what's going on down there in the Gulf of Mexico, and believe me, this is quite typical. It's just that these spills normally take place deep out at sea, so we don't really see the impact on our local ecologies like we are in Louisiana. The number, 415-762-1161. How about calling in? Let me know how you feel and what actions your community is taking to let your congressman know that these kinds of solutions are out there. By the way, if you want the contact information for that microbe, I will make it available at xsquaredradio.com. And I think also you'll be able to get it through BBS Radio. We'll put it on our Facebook. If you're not a member of the, a friend of the Facebook for X Squared Radio, that's easy to do. Just look up x2-radio at yahoo.com or bagnew at x2-radio.com, and you'll be able to find that Facebook out there. No problem. Sign up, become a friend, and we'll send you regular information. If you're not part of our newsletter, please go to x2-radio.com, sign up for the newsletter. We'll send these things out on an irregular but informative basis. So I want to get back to this clean energy battle. It's not just about cleaning up oil spills. You know, in the quality industry, I'm a Six Sigma black belt. A lot of you don't know what that is. It has nothing to do with martial arts. It has to do with applying mathematical, statistical tools to analyze processes, to find areas of wasted movement, wasted investment, to find variation in processes. And one of the things that that we come in contact with are a lot of different industries that are struggling with those very problems. And so we go around as experts to help various industries clean up their act, become more efficient and more profitable, more nimble, more agile. And one of the industries that's suffering badly because of it is the energy industry. What we try to do is not detect the problem after it happens, but to design in prevention. So we call it pokayoke. It's Japanese. It means to prevent a problem from ever occurring. Design in the quality so that these kinds of things can happen. I don't know if you know how the oil spill happened on this rig in the Gulf of Mexico, but when you're drilling for oil, you often run into pockets of high-pressure methane gas. Well, that gas is very easily controlled by pumping down the center of the drill pipe heavyweight mud. Now, this mud is designed to be dense and push the cuttings that the drill is making as it's making the hole deeper or longer from side to side if they use directional drilling, but containing all of the high pressure, sometimes it's sulfur dioxide and sometimes it's methane gas, from coming to the surface. It comes to the surface in the mud, and it can be filtered out that way. But this particular time, the managers of this rig, British Petroleum, went to government officials and asked to remove the mud from the rig so that they could make a move which would normally take more time with the mud. But they could make the move very quickly without the mud in the hole. The problem is that if you break through into a gas packet, there's nothing to hold the gas back. It comes blasting to the surface, going from liquid to gaseous form at about 1,000 times its original volume without blowing up because there's no oxygen in the hole. But when it comes to the surface and blows the steel off the head of the rig, it strikes oxygen. And if there's anything there to ignite it, it instantly bursts into flame and you have a real problem. And that's what happened with this rig. It was a shortcut. It was a problem that they designed into the process by not following the regulations and rules and processes that have been put in place to keep this activity relatively safe. So when we talk about how many years it takes to get energy going, a lot of it has to do with the same oil companies. Do you know how many years it takes in court to get a wind farm built and operational? I witnessed a wind farm with 15 1-megawatt wind generators in Idaho that sat, built, brand spanking new and hooked up, that sat unused for 2 years while they fought through court to try to get these wind generators turned on. They finally did. But that's what it comes down to. Do you know that it's still illegal in Washington State to blend biodiesel at the pump with simple and safe static mixers? They still require splash blending and designated tanks for each blend. What station could afford to even carry biodiesel blends for their customers with outdated regulations like that? Because those regulations were put in place and lobbied for by the oil companies to keep biodiesel from getting to you, to keep you from access to clean-burning fuels. Do you know that the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has approved not one single electric vehicle for highway use in America except for the Tesla Lotus? At $110,000 a copy, I doubt that that's very effective. Not one other electric vehicle has been approved. Did you know that the Department of Motor Vehicles in each state requires electric vehicle manufacturers to prove they have a network of maintenance stations within 25 miles of every owner of an electric vehicle before the vehicles can be licensed in that state? How convenient is that? These are regulations you can change with simple proposals and resolutions in your own states. Any citizen can bring one to vote by simply following the procedures that are practically free. All you have to do is draft the resolution, go to a city council meeting, and begin the process. You have the power to change everything and demand electric vehicles or affordable biodiesel in your states. It can happen only if you take action. If it wasn't for the regulations and blockades set up by the oil companies through their bought and paid for politicians, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in today. We wouldn't have the mess in the Gulf if it wasn't for BP bypassing proven safety procedures for using that heavy mud to contain the high-pressure methane gas. There wouldn't be a spill destroying premium fishing habitats and the economy on American soil. You'd be horrified to find out what happens and habitats they have decimated in foreign countries whose people have no such voice or the ability to choose. If I were you, I'd follow Leilani's admonition and wake up, and I'd answer the call. And by the way, don't criticize racing. They haven't used gasoline in years. 100% methanol, which is clean burning and pollution free. Take some time and money and do something about it. If you let government take over BP's assets in the Gulf, then you give them the power to do the same thing to your company and the one you work for. The choice is yours and yours alone. Do not abdicate it to the White House. Now, every once in a while we get fired up about local politics. This happens to be national politics, and it's hitting home. I like shrimp. I like the fish that comes out of the Gulf of Mexico. Lots of restaurants up here in our state rely on that fish that's caught down in the Gulf of Mexico. And that fish is going to go away. One of the chemicals that they put on that oil sinks it to the bottom. Oh, it doesn't show up on the beaches. It doesn't show up in the waves and in the sea from satellite view. No, it drops to the bottom. It is absorbed by the clams and the shrimp and the lobsters. It's absorbed by the sea life that lives on the bottom. It kills the reefs. It kills the plant life that lives on the bottom, and all the microbes and plankton upon which all that sea life relies. What you heard in the YouTube about the microbes is absolutely true. The chemicals that they're using to try to gather up this spill, to clean it up, to contain it, are more toxic than the oil itself. I just want you to know I'm passionate about this, if you can't hear it in my voice. And I think that you guys have the solution out there. I think you have the strength. I think you have the will. And I think you can do it. And I have faith in you. So we're here at X Squared Radio, and we're Earth Explorers. And when we find a mess, we try to clean it up. And this is a mess. And I'm asking for your help, for your support. So go to xsquaredradio.com, go to bbsradio.com, do a little bit of research on Google, and by all means, write your congressman, write your senator. They will listen with enough of you getting to them. Now I'm going to play a little music here as we take a break, about 5 minutes, and I think it'll be appropriate. So hang in there. We'll be right back after this.